This is All Things Considered on KNKX. I'm Ed Ronco. In Timothy Egan's new book, the Seattle author goes on a nearly 1,200-mile pilgrimage from Canterbury to Rome, from the seat of the Church of England to the epicenter of Roman Catholicism. Egan grew up Irish Catholic in Spokane, and he points to the church as being both a source of comfort and pain for his family. The pilgrimage, he writes in the early pages, was conceived as a way to, quote, force the issue to decide what I believe or admit what I don't. Timothy Egan, welcome.
Great to be with you, Ed. Thank you.
Glad you're here. First of all, tell us about this route you took and pronounce it for us.
Via Francigena.
Okay.
And in the Middle Ages, a million people a year walked it. And the reason they walked it and risked death and exposure and being robbed was because if they got there, they'd have all their sins forgiven. That's why my book is called A Pilgrimage to Eternity. You guaranteed your place in heaven, essentially, if you could walk this route. And then it fell into obscurity, the mists of time, post-Reformation, and then the European Union revived it in the 1994. It gets about 40,000 people a year right now. It's a spectacular country. Hmm. But it also goes through the theological cradle of Christianity. So it had a lot of things going for it from my perspective.
Your journey came after the death of your mother, Joan.
These things sometimes happen in a delayed way. My mother died a few years ago, and on her deathbed, she was very devout, progressive Catholic. We got all the liberal Catholic magazines around our house, and mother of seven, one right after the other. And on her deathbed, she expressed some doubt. She said, I really don't know what's ahead. And I didn't really think about it much at the time because my faith was lapsed. But then as I pondered this pilgrimage, I could sort of hear her voice. Mm. And her urging, press this issue yourself. And I'd been sort of wading in the pool of agnosticism, like a lot of folks, because it's a nice pool. It's about 95 degrees with the jets always going. It's comfortable. You don't ever have to think about these things. And I thought I would press these issues.
You, I'm guessing, sat next to your mother in Mass growing up. You looked to her as sort of a spiritual guide for some length of time. Was it surprising to hear her say, that she had some doubt at the very end?
It really was, especially considering what happened to our family. The largest crisis in the Catholic Church right now, I say in 500 years since Martin Luther and the dawn of the Reformation, is the sexual abuse crisis mm-hmm. of predatory priests. And this affected our family. One member of my family lost his best friend who killed himself. And I said, that's it. I will not forgive these bastards. My mother held on to her faith, though, because she'd had one or two genuinely spiritual moments in her life where she felt the presence of something greater than her. But then this doubt at the very end just completely threw me.
Well, you also talk about your mother having, on one hand, very moving, important experiences in her life that meant the church was a great source of comfort to her.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's a passage where you talk about her needing a hysterectomy to save her life and going and seeking the advice of the priest about that.
Yeah, and it shows in microcosm the conflicts of the church itself. So on one hand, it can be soothing and comforting by practicing the biblical admonition to treat the least among you well and the admonition to comfort the afflicted. My mother would go on these retreats that were free and she would nearly have a nervous breakdown before she left. And she'd come home and she was a new person. On the other hand, after having 8 kids, because she lost one in a miscarriage, the doctor told her that she had to have a hysterectomy. The priest and then later the bishop made her feel like it was a spiritual crime.
Your reflections on faith and your family are interspersed throughout the history of Christianity in Europe, and it is a bloody and difficult history.
It really is, and I say the durability of that history is not positive because it involves so many high crimes. But the starting of Christianity, the first 3 centuries, it's, as I say, a struggling spiritual startup that by all odds shouldn't have become the world's dominant faith. 50 years after the death of Christ, there were no more than 2,000 Christians in all the 50 million people of the Roman Empire. That's according to their census. Hmm. When it was a religion of love and tolerance, it was infectious, and they used to say how these Christians love one another. Women could be deacons. There wasn't all this hierarchical power. But then they make their original sin, to use the term, which is church and state join. And that starts when the Roman Empire not only legalized Christianity, but made it the state religion. It took about a century to go from legalization to outlawing all the old gods of the Roman Empire and the Greek Empire. And shortly thereafter, they're waging war against infidels. And those are just Christians who were heretical, too. That said, I came into this book very open-minded. I said, get rid of your skepticism. Go into this thing as a true seeker. And I don't end on the side of all religion is bad. I mean, I'm encouraged by genuine people of faith. I'm encouraged by the supernatural, which I have a chapter on miracles, and something happens to me on this trail which I can't explain, the inexplicable. And by the way, Christianity is tied up in the inexplicable. So it's a balance of the one hand is the history of organized religion, it does not bode well, but faith itself is something different. And the power of that faith and the power of that philosophy is something I will not trash.
How were you changed when you came back? How did you approach life in Seattle differently, having been on this pilgrimage?
So I had to come back in the middle of this. I broke it up into two parts because I got injured and I had some family things to tend to. So I went back and finished the Via Francigena. When I was home in Seattle, I missed being a pilgrim. I missed the drama. I missed the surprise. I missed the daily searching and seeking. I missed all the companions I met. I missed all the adventure. My mind was over there. I'd finally broken down my ADD daily level thinking, which a lot of us have with our digital distractions, and I was able to sort through some things. So I really missed it, and I was a changed person. I still am.
Was it isolating?
You have long, lonely stretches, and then you run into people, and you don't necessarily want to walk with them. You may not like them even. I mean, that happened to me a couple of times. They were, I'll just walk with you. And I was like, well, no.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I got my own thing going here. You know, it's like, because, you know, it's one trail, and you're going to see them. But it was isolating in that you'd gone through a singular experience. I certainly don't think of myself on any higher moral plane or anything like that. I just think I did a rigorous triathlon of the soul.
Can you talk a little more about what you mean?
Yeah, so the way I prepared for this journey was to first get myself in physical shape. The harder part was preparing spiritually and personally. You know, I atoned, I gave a donation to charity, I told this guy I wanted to end the feud we were in, although he later said, were we in a feud? Completely ticked me off because he couldn't even acknowledge my feud. That's the sort of starting of the rigorous triathlon of the soul. And then every day you're on the trail, or at least for me, people take different approaches to this. Every pilgrim is different. Every pilgrimage is different. I would try to say, today I'm going to think about this. So I would drill down on a certain question. And that's the process of deep walking. And the triathlon part of it is when you push yourself. So we all are pretty complacent in our beliefs and thinking. And it's tough to get out of your complacency. So that's the triathlon part of it, is when I would say, but if, I would try to take it to the second and third levels of it. Even though I didn't reach complete resolution on all of these, I did resolve a whole bunch of these questions, you know, about guilt and nature of sin and just and benevolent God and those sorts of things. And you could probably do this at home, but you would have to be in an isolated chamber or something. The pilgrimage forces this.
You're with your own thoughts
the whole time. You're with your own thoughts, which is a luxury. So the triathlon of the soul was difficult initially, and I'm way more difficult than the physical part.
Timothy Egan, thank you for taking us along on your pilgrimage.
Thanks for having me.
Timothy Egan is a New York Times columnist and a New York Times bestselling author. He lives in Seattle, and his latest book is A Pilgrimage to Eternity.